All right, good afternoon. We're back with the Thursday podcast. Pastor Sean has abandoned us once again, but we will soldier on and do our best. And we've got a more of a current event story today concerning food stamps. And this is a process that's been going on in Alabama. So the headline is 13 Alabama counties saw an 85% drop in food stamp participation after work requirements restarted. And this was posted on June 5th. So, interesting development here. Maybe it's too logical for us to get here, but this is maybe something worth talking about. I thought Pastor Sean would like this one with the work ethic side of things, and here he is not here. So
he's working.
Yeah, he is working. So he's missing out on his opportunity to decry the lack of work ethic in America. So we'll have to pick up the slack.
He can post his comments below.
That's right.
13 previously exempted Alabama County saw an 85% drop in food stamp participation after work requirements were put in place on January 1st, according to the Alabama Department of Human Resources. The counties Greene, Hale, Perry, Dallas, Loudoun, Wilcox, Monroe, Kanuka, Clark, Washington, Choctaw, Sumter, and Barber had been exempt from a change that limited able-bodied adults without dependents to 3 months of supplemental nutrition assistance program benefits within a 3-year time frame unless they were working or participating in an approved training program.
So we got pretty specific exemptions there, right? Able-bodied adults without dependents who have been on food stamps for 3 months.
We probably wonder why they were exempt to start with.
Yeah, exactly. So we're not talking about some poor single mother with 7 kids that's struggling to feed the family. We're talking about able-bodied people with no dependents.
So they basically gave them 90 days to find a job.
Yep. Or at least be looking for a job.
You know, if you
right?
if you lose a job, then you got 90 days to find a job or enter a training program to get a job.
Yeah.
So during the economic downturn of 2011 to 2013, several states, including Alabama, waived the SNAP, S-N-A-P, work requirements in response to high unemployment. It was
That's why it got waived.
Okay. It was reinstituted for 54 counties on January 1st, 2016, and for the remaining 13 on January 1st, 2017. As of April 2017, the highest jobless rate among the 13 previously excluded counties was in Wilcox County, which reported a state-high unemployment rate of 11.7%, down more than 11 percentage points from the county's jobless rate for the same month of 2011. Ending the exemption has dramatically cut the number of SNAP recipients in the counties. As of January 1st, 2017, there were 13,663 able-bodied adults without dependents receiving food stamps statewide. That number dropped to 7,483 by May 1st of 2017. Among the 13 counties, there were 5,538 adults ages 18 to 50 without dependents receiving food stamps as of January 1st, 2017. That number dropped to 831, a decline of about 85% by May 1st, 2017. Based on the trend, the number of able-bodied adults without dependents recipients for SNAP benefits is expected to continue to decline statewide and in the formerly 13 exempted counties, according to the Alabama DHR spokesperson John Hardy. Statewide, the number of able-bodied adults receiving food stamps has fallen by almost 35,000 people since January 1st, 2016. Each recipient receives about $126 a month in benefits. Nationwide, there are about 44 million people receiving SNAP benefits at a cost of about $71 billion. The Trump administration has vowed to cut the food stamp rolls over the next decade, including ensuring that able-bodied adult recipients are working. So I wonder, what would an 85% reduction on $71 billion look like?
Well, let's see.
the 56.6 plus another, yeah, so I mean,
$60 million.
About $60 million, yeah, $60 billion.
$60 billion, yeah.
Imagine what we could do with $60 billion more dollars in the federal budget.
And, you know, what's the thing
they
that's always...
They something to do with it.
Yeah. They could build a wall.
Yeah. Probably send it to other countries.
Yeah.
But think about what the accusation that's always leveled at people. Once you start... As soon as somebody brings up the idea of cutting benefits, welfare benefits, it's you're heartless, you're... You know, you don't care about people, you're probably racist in this day and age, you know, all this other stuff. And... All they did here was cut the benefits for able-bodied workers without dependents, and it cuts it to that degree. You know,
which leads you to believe that there are, well, at least since they started that, there were jobs available.
Yeah.
You know, maybe in 11, 12, and 13 there weren't during that time, but obviously if that many, you know, if 85% or like really 50%, I don't know if that was all the statewide, it decreased by almost 50%.
Well, I would guess. Yeah, I would guess
13.6 to 74.
Yeah, so I guess that all 85% didn't get jobs, but some of them had to. If the right. unemployment rate has dropped 11%,
right? Yeah, and that's, you know, they're at least finding work or there's work available now.
Mm-hmm.
So partially maybe with the economy picking up and places hiring. You know, instead of just, I know the temptation's always, you know, I don't want to work a minimum wage or slightly above minimum wage mm-hmm. job. I'll just keep getting my benefits.
Yeah.
So if you force them to do, you know, to go start working, you know, I think the key is that there are jobs out there
yeah.
that they can go take.
And
again, I mean, you know, and sometimes you can't be that picky about what you want. I know Heather was just telling me about one of her friends that, you know, got a part-time job and, you know, in discussions of pay, you know, the employer agreed to pay, you know, $8 an hour, but then said, you know, if you can do these other things or once you get to where you can do these, I'll pay you more. And so she did part of it, and then when they still paid her $8, she was like, well, I want, you know, the other amount that you promised me. And they said, well, you're not quite there yet.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, then I'm just going to quit. And it was like, just, why would you quit? You know,
yeah.
You say, okay, I'll do the other things that you want me to do. And, you know, so I can get the extra money. So, you know, just the mindset.
So $0 an hour is more appealing than $8 an hour.
Yeah. With the potential for more.
Right.
Well, let me just take the potential from this is the
yeah.
exact
even
mindset.
Even if there were no potential for more,
right. This is just the exact mindset. Wait, I'm lazy. I don't want to do the potential for more things.
But you can. But, yeah, you don't have to do anything else, and you can still.
I can still make $8 an hour.
Not changing anything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But because you won't pay me a dollar more, because I won't do the things that I'm too lazy to do. I'll show you how lazy I am. I'll quit and I'll take $0 an hour.
Well, and the only way somebody can do that is if there's a safety net somewhere, whether that's parents, whether that's a welfare system.
And that's why they
cut
the net.
Right?
Right.
And so when you take the net away from those that have the ability to work, well, what do you know? There's motivation to, well, I guess I'm going to have to get my job now.
You know, it almost sounds like a biblical principle, David, that John Smith incorporated many, many years ago in the founding of our nation. Those who don't work don't eat.
I wonder where he got that from.
Yeah.
But they did have that common storehouse back then, didn't they?
But the common storehouse led to starvation.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know it.
That's why he instituted the biblical principle of if you don't eat or you don't work, you don't eat.
Did you know there's a theory out there, I don't know if any of y'all have ever come across it, but you know, in the book of Acts where it says the early church shared everything amongst themselves.
Yeah.
Right after that, there was a famine in Jerusalem. So perhaps that was not the best approach to how they did things. That maybe there was an impact because there were so many believers there in the city that were kind of trying to do this socialistic sort of thing. Not socialism, but social community, that it impacted the rest of the harvest and stuff that was going on. Maybe that's not the best idea. You know, maybe Paul's idea of, we're all going to work at this thing. I'm going to work at this thing. I'm running the show, and I'm going to work. You know, that's kind of lost on this
And if you don't work, you don't get to eat.
Yeah. Yeah, you can stay with us. You know, you can stay, but we're not. You're not getting any food.
We'll eventually bury you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's interesting. I just kind of wanted to see. Going to school in Florida, I have driven through Alabama many times to and from Ohio.
My condolences.
Oh boy, it is.
If there was ever a doctrine of purgatory, it's in yelling "Roll Tide" at you. Was that all you was?
No, it was just miles of nothing.
You're going to offend all of our Alabama listeners.
I know.
Oh, you Herschel Walker, you.
You anti-Alabamite.
Anyway, so I pulled up a county map because I kind of wanted to see, and I don't know about you guys, but when you hear about food stamps and people, you kind of think more projects, more inner city type stuff. At least that's what comes to my mind. But when I went and looked at a county map of Alabama, where most of these counties are actually very rural areas. Many of them are on the borderlines, you know, with Mississippi on the left and Georgia on the right. None of them are anywhere near the larger cities, which I kind of expected it to be there. Was there's got to be, you know, inside of like a Birmingham, that there's going to be a larger portion of able-bodied people that just aren't working.
So you're saying like they could at least go grow their own food?
Yeah, there was plenty of land available.
But, you know, that's true for our own state. Mm-hmm. I was, in January, I was in up in Raleigh at a speech event. And there was somebody up there, and they were talking about they had done a demographic study, and they worked in Raleigh in one of those places that do those kind of studies. And they were saying that if you take I-40 as it runs across our state, and you move north of I-40 and you get up around Roxboro and you run that across to like Greenville, mm-hmm. and you just look at the northern strip of the Virginia border of North Carolina, it accounts for 60% of our state's poverty.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And up there you're starting to get into the high ground farming and the and the mining and the situation.
And that makes sense because farming has, you know, if you don't have a huge, you know, if you're not owned by some,
yeah, part
huge,
of some big conglomerate,
huge
or something.
Conglomerate, yeah. Corporation that's
so,
just
so,
out there.
So the northern, the
destroying
northern,
the land,
probably the northern
basically.
Strip of Alabama and the farming strips along yeah. the borders of Mississippi and Georgia, which would be farming territories.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's probably not. That probably accounts for a lot of what's going on. But yes. Like you said, if there were not jobs available, we would not see a 11% drop in unemployment from 22.7% to 11%.
Yeah, I mean, that's unheard of.
That's significant.
It's astronomical when you think about those numbers. I mean, it's dropped what, a percentage point or so, or a percentage point or so in
nationwide
in the last year or so, and that's a major shift. Mm-hmm. So when you're talking about a state dropping 11%, I mean, that's quite a reduction.
What makes you wonder how dependent have we become on the safety nets?
Well, I'm about to make some listeners mad because I got some radical theories.
Well, you
here.
Do every week, so it's okay.
I'm gonna go ahead and take it. I'll take it to the next level. First of all, our nation and our culture, this is the ultimate end of the Enlightenment movement and of the push for education for everyone, and it's really our own fault. And hear me out. Let's just take males for the sake of argument. Let's be fair. Okay, let's say that the fairer sex shouldn't work and labor hard.
Did you just assume their genders?
I did.
Okay.
That's why I
making
said.
Sure. Making sure.
Hey, it was a warning. I said I'm going to upset mm-hmm. some people. Okay, I'm going to say that.
I don't know that our listeners are going to be upset.
Yeah, hopefully not at that point. Anyway.
Well, just wait.
It's coming. It's
so
coming.
Stick around. Right.
Equal
it's
opportunity. Right. Go ahead.
Wait for it.
But let's just assume that we're talking about only males. When does a male become able-bodied to work?
Oh, brother, let's go back 12 years old.
Let's say 12 years old. And
I started my first
right
paper
after his bar
route.
Okay.
I started my first paper route at 12, and even before that, I was walking around selling seeds and all kinds
yeah.
of stuff, door-to-door, shoveling sidewalks.
I bet an industrious 10-year-old could probably make some money cutting grass.
Right. So here's my point.
Yeah.
We've arrived at a position in society where we don't expect and really what amounts to an able-bodied male to work until they're maybe 23, 24.
Yeah, it's about time they graduate college.
Right, because what we tell them is you're going to go to school, you're going to get a good education, and then what are you going to do? You're going to enter the workforce. Well, I'm going to tell you, it's too late. They haven't learned how to work by that point.
Hmm.
And the problem is we're setting up for failure, because what do most kids do when they get home from school?
Watch TV and play video games.
Watch TV, play video games. If they're really studious, they may do some homework. But, you know, let's be honest. There's a lot of really not doing anything time spent until who gets home from work, both mom and dad. And I want to put forth that this also touches the immigration piece as well, because who's picking up the slack for all these teenagers that aren't working like they used to 100 years ago? And it's those who've come into our country illegally, because they are kind of, let's just say, low man on the totem pole. So they have to take what work they can get, because if they push for too much, if they say, no, I want $10 an hour, then they're just going to say, okay, we'll go get somebody else, or let me call ICE or whatever you're going to do, right? So what we've got is 200 years ago or 100 years ago, let's say, jobs that 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds, 14 and 15, those jobs that are kind of entry-level labor, nobody wants to do them, they were actually done by our own citizens' children. And on the farm, and there's not as many family farms as much because we go to, you know, we've got large superstores and all of this. So we've kind of made this whole system. And, it's one reason it's broken is because we don't teach males what work is early enough. And really females either. Mm-hmm. I mean, we could go there as well in our society. But that's a whole other piece. We don't teach the fact that males are supposed to provide for and take care of the females, because that is just totally antisocial. You know, we can't go there. And so we are actually almost to a point where I don't know if there's a solution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think your point on this everybody goes to college thing, and we've touched on it before, but the myth out there, the narrative that's out there, is that education defeats poverty. Education defeats name your cause. And it's just not true. Right? You know, education doesn't guarantee you a salary enough to overcome poverty, because it all depends on what you're studying, what you've accomplished, and all that. It's much more the work ethic that conquers poverty, right? And you see this with guys that get up there. You'll see this with a Ben Carson or, you know, a Thomas Sowell or some of these conservative African-American speakers that'll get up and say, listen, Ben Carson says, I became the number one neurosurgeon in America, and I grew up in abject poverty in Baltimore, right? How did that happen? Well, because I worked my way out of there, right? Now, we can talk about, you know, God blessing people with abilities and all that kind of stuff, and not everybody's going to become a neurosurgeon.
But the work ethic is what
gets you out.
It was like the article we watched, I think it was last week after the podcast.
Yeah.
You know, where they were, was it like Man on the Street thing?
Right.
Where they were interviewing, and they're asking the people on the projects the question. They're like, well, I can do whatever we want. Yeah, I can tell my kid he can do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the one lady was saying, you know, I got, what, a doctor and a dentist and whatever. Mm-hmm. And she said, yeah, they grew up here. And
well, Colin Powell described it the same way.
Yeah.
Grew up in, you know, the boroughs of New York, and he said you had the ants that hung out over the balconies to make sure that all the kids did what they were supposed to do, and they weren't really your aunts, but all the women kind of looked out for the community of the kids, and they straightened you out, and you did everything. But, John, I want to go back to something you were saying with the farming aspect. Industrialization had a lot to do with that, too.
Right. Yeah, I think it was a perfect storm. It was industrialization and the Enlightenment combined in history.
Because what happened is it created a vacuum. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about a modern-day vacuum that anybody that's in our region, you only need to take a 45-minute drive in the fall to go and actually experience
really
this and see it.
Modern-day vacuum.
The Sampson County, Sampson County borders us as borders Cumberland County. And in the fall, what will happen is, and I was out there as a youth pastor, many of the kids in my youth group didn't attend a Wednesday night youth group a whole lot because they didn't have time. They were working the farms. We're talking, 12-year-olds out there driving tractors till 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night. They're picking melons on Saturday all day long. But then there comes a time of season in which the harvest has to be brought in such a rapid state. And then they have to convert the fields to get it back to a replenishing state, cover it with the tarping systems and stuff like that to have it all maintained. The immigrant workers will come in at that time, and they have no choice but to hire the immigrant workers to accomplish all that has to be done in such a short time frame or risk economic loss. And I'm going to submit to you that the reason why they have to do that is because you can't have that many children to produce that large of a family anymore to cover the amount of land that they're working, because it's not a network of small farmers anymore. It's a fewer farmers who have taken over larger fields. They have to maintain it because so many people in the industrial time moved to the city. So now we have this large amount of unemployment sitting in the city. And part of our system isn't to take those guys that are sitting down at Manpower trying to find a job and saying, hey, guess what? It's September. It's October. It's harvest season. Get on the bus. We're going to drive you 45 minutes where there's a lot of work for you, even if it's only a temporal season work process. We're not doing that. So these farmers who may or may not really want to hire the immigrants are left with no recourse or risk their crops ruining and facing financial ruin for their family.
And that's because we've taught them that it's your right to sit in the city and still receive something because that work is beneath you, this is a human... I mean, I heard some crazy... the other day, I heard someone saying that the internet is a basic human right. Having free access to the internet for everybody every social economic status is a basic human right. We have gone crazy with this idea of what a basic human right is. And really, we need to go back to the book and see what did God say our human rights are.
That the idea of the farm going away, at least the independent farmer going away, I think that you could trace that through.
Yeah.
And the industrialization, just move that forward 100 years to technology, and it's the same thing. It's great that we can produce more things in a more rapid time frame, but what it's done is it's taken away the need for the work ethic, right? So now, whereas before, you had to work. You know, the idea when I can say, if you don't work, you don't eat. Okay, well, I understand that. I can't go down to McDonald's and get a dollar cheeseburger, so I better get to work. Whereas now, it's, well, you have to choose to have a work ethic. And that's your choice. And if you would rather not do that, you know, and it becomes this semantic conversation rather than a what were you created to do conversation.
Yeah, so if you want to fix the system, now let's talk about the fix. This is the radical part that I'm going to make somebody mad, okay?
Again?
Yes. Okay, here's the things that need to be rewarded. Work needs to be rewarded.
Yeah.
Okay. So tax breaks and things, they go to people who work. And it's not like, work. You can't just say, I work. You've got to prove your work through efficient productivity. Okay. And then, secondly, people who have families need to get rewarded. I still agree with that. The tax break for those who have, because Jackie, one of your points that is the reason people aren't having as large families, not only that, families aren't living and staying in the area of the family plot, the farm anymore. Yeah. So, you know, your children's children aren't helping you do the harvest.
Right.
Families, and part of that is because of the automobile. I can move to California or the train. I can move my whole family across.
And also you're being pushed. You go to the city, go to the city, go to the city, where your apartment's this big in the city.
Mm-hmm.
Can't have six kids if you live in a two-bedroom apartment.
Right. Yeah. And then, of course, in this era of, white privilege... And the disdain for the male gender, any idea that you would reward a man for taking care of a family is just out there, right?
Yeah.
But I think that's also you want to talk about fixing the problem is reward those things, hard work, taking care of your family, having a large family. Those are some of the things that I think, of course. I don't see that happening in our society.
Yeah. Even with large families, though, going back to Bible days, I know when I was teaching through John, you know, the idea of the usually it was the family that sowed the seed, but when harvest came, that's when they were going out getting the laborers, mm-hmm. because, as Jackie said,
yep.
you know, even the family wasn't big enough to bring it all in on time, so they had to go out and hire the guy early in the morning and all throughout the day, you know, hey, come help me harvest, because that was the time restraint of getting that stuff in, getting it to market, and
yeah, sure, getting think it of that ready. Idea.
So, I mean, there's, you know, even if you have a large family, you know, there's those seasonal times that you still have to have laborers.
And probably those trade workers, when it wasn't seasonal harvest time, based upon either the wooling season or the building season in preparation for the harvest coming in and needing more storehouses of that nature, they were probably jack of all trades, able to
do
several different things, and they worked which kind of trade they kind of specialized, two or three trades, and they kind of worked them in a rotation as the years.
And that's like when I go skiing, you know, the guys that are working at the ski resorts, you know, you ask them, what are you doing in the summer? I'm a lifeguard. You know, and so it's like they lifeguard.
I'm a rafting guide.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like, you know, during the summer I go to the beach and I lifeguard and do stuff at the beach. In the winter I'm going to go to the resort and, you know, I'm going to work at the ski lift or, you know, work there. And, you know, they just kind of rotate around and pick seasonal work where it's available. And
it goes back to that myth. You know, talking about basic human rights and our previous administration talking about it, it's everybody's basic right to be able to go to college. And that's such a enough of us have been in classrooms around this table that we know every student in our classroom should not be going to college, right? That you set them up for failure by pushing them into that, you know, pigeonhole, rather than giving them a trade or a skill that they could accomplish things and have a productive life and have a family and have all that stuff. But we're going to push them all into one category. It's the same thing we've talked about with education, you know, Federal Department of Education. We're going to come up with one curriculum for a kid in New York City, you know, a Hispanic immigrant in Los Angeles, a Cuban immigrant in Miami, a rural kid in Alabama, you know, a kid in Indiana. It's the most ridiculous thing you've ever heard, right? Why would you do that? Why wouldn't you allow people to market things to those skills? If I'm growing up in rural Alabama, then why don't I start training kids to do agricultural work? You know, why wouldn't I do that if that's what they're going to do?
I mean, seriously, Ocala, Florida school system in 2011 was sinking. I was part of a research team that did an analysis on them through Liberty University, and our recommendation was that Ocala and revamp their entire educational focus within their county schools to veterinary sciences, because it's a huge horse ranch county, and they've done that, and now their schools are thriving again, and people are staying in the community because they tied to the local college. Yeah. They did certain things. They weren't looking for these high-minded jobs. They were targeting, what does our county need? Let's build our education system around that.
Yeah, imagine that.
Let's not listen to the entire nation trend. And their economy's recovering.
Yeah, and I don't want to beat a dead horse, but it goes back to the sovereignty.
Especially of God. They can move to Ocala and they have the meds in there.
It goes back to the sovereignty of God, because has anyone seen The Circle in here yet?
No.
Okay, so The Circle's this movie just came out, and it's about something like a Google, and I'm not going to give a lot of spoilers, but in that movie, one idea was that every human should be able, it's a basic human right, to have the knowledge that any other human on the planet has. And so if you climb Mount Everest, I should be able to climb Mount Everest virtually by you taking a camera up there with you, and I experienced this. And so this was another one of those crazy human right things in that. And that if you withhold anything from another human being, then you're depriving them of their human rights. Mm-hmm. And so, but the problem is, the reality is, God put me here in North Carolina for this time. That's the sovereignty of God. You know what it's called when I want to be somewhere else? It's called rebellion. But we've turned our eyes to this, our blind eye to this, and so we've taught students and children that, you know, you can be whatever you want to be, you know. You know, if you want to be an elephant when you grow up, you can be an elephant. My daughter thought she wanted to be an elephant when she was like 3. What do you want to be when you grow up? An elephant. Okay, now that's not going to work out.
Yeah.
Unless I was a human, I said, you could be one of those.
Yeah. I'm sure she could get plastic surgery and get a big long nose.
She can always identify as that. Right. It would be perfectly fine.
But, you know, and it's, what's funny is the clarion cry that you hear from humanists about the problems of the planet are actually acerbated by their own philosophies. Because if you would just do the planet like God planned for it to be, where you have families, you take care of your land, and you work. I mean, back when we had farms, smaller farms, and we weren't throwing away plastic things. But now that we've got this massive move away from farming into technology, we make things out of plastic, and we got to make them faster and cheaper, and we've got to have more and more engineering and STEM people working on these things. And where's it going to end? The end is more disastrous for the planet.
Because it removes the uniqueness of humanity. Yeah. I there's a great meme going around for a while that said, eat organic food, or as your grandparents called it, food. That's where we've gotten to now. We have to go to get special organic food.
Yeah.
You know, that's how, but, you know, to your point on where you are, I mean, think about how businesses operate in the United States. Right, there are certain restaurants that will not go to cities that don't have a certain population because they know they can't sustain and make money. Right, if I was a fisherman, I'm not going to set up shop in Nebraska. You know, like there's just some common sense things. But the world today is, well, I deserve to have a fisherman in Nebraska. You know, I should be able to do that because that's what I want. Yeah. And it's so antithetical to what God has created it for.
Yeah, and it sounds so much like the Tower of Babel.
Yeah, there's some parallels there.
And go back to, hey, this is where I grew up. This is, of course, now I'm migrant because of the Army and getting here to North Carolina. But
they sent you. You didn't.
Right. But you get the idea of this idea that people sit here and they go, why can't I have what John has or what Sally has or whatever? I was talking to my mother about this at one point, and then it's probably a couple of years ago, and she made the statement, and it happened with TV. Up until TV came out, you didn't know how people in California lived.
Yeah, I was thinking that this
morning. You didn't know how people lived.
I didn't know that there was a bus crash in Africa.
So now I want to move to New York. I want to move to L.A. because look how they live, and it's so much better than me out here hoeing the dirt. Trying to make something grow.
Exactly.
Yeah, whereas before, this was what life was.
This is what life was, and I didn't know any better because all I knew was my local community, for the most part.
And so instead of, I'm going to be the best that I can be at what's in front of me, you know, there are a million other expectations that I want to try to meet because...
I'm going to the greener grass across the nation.
Yeah. And you know, move wherever you move places, that's fine. But but the principle here is that's not the point. You know, the point is if some force took you somewhere else, well then work your tail off when you get there.
Yeah, but let's get back to our article. And what happens a lot is people will have an opportunity right in front of them, but they're saying, no, I'm not going to take that.
Even though God's given me
that because it's only $10 an hour. I need to make 18
because I want to live like that person I'm seeing on TV way over there in a different. Even an economic market.
Right.
And the problem with that is...
So you know what? Better yet, I'm not going to do anything. They can just give it to me.
Well, but we find the same when people apply for jobs here in North Carolina. You know, it's, well, I'm coming from this area and I made, you know, $60,000, so I want to get paid the same. Yeah. You're going, yeah, but... You know,
our cost of living is,
you know, two-thirds of that.
We're a $40,000 market.
Right. And they're going, well, no, yeah, I'm not going to come then. Well, sorry, you know, don't come.
Yeah,
but,
I mean, we're not talking about the person that... you know, was in the Dust Bowl in Kansas, and the family was suffering, so they went to Chicago and got a factory job because they needed to support the family.
No, we're not.
That's not
about
who
that.
We're talking about, right?
Right.
This is a whole other conversation of people not being set. Like you said, there's a job right there. There's 25 jobs right there.
It's back to Steve's thing of, I'll show you. I'm not taking your $8 an hour because you won't pay me $9 an hour.
Yeah.
I'm going to work for $0
an
hour.
Yeah,
I'm going to do $0 an hour.
It's frustrating because I've actually seen this with, like, you know, young adults going through this thing. You know, there's a job offer. No, I can't take that because it's not enough. and you just think to yourself, just get out there and work. God will bless that. And it's, yeah. When you think about the 12 and 13-year-old, you selling seeds, okay? I sold seeds too. I decided right then and there, I'm not a salesman. I'm going to go do something like paint. So my dad got me a job painting.
I cut grass.
And I learned how to paint. And the reason I can paint now is because I painted when I was 12 years old. And I painted for almost nothing because all I was doing was they were donating a little bit for me to go to camp. And so I painted their whole house for probably like $45, okay? It was the worst deal ever. Talk about the art of the deal. It was horrible.
Couldn't have been any worse than my first one that I actually bid on. And, you know, I'm like four, I don't know, I might have been 16. I don't even think I, 15 or 16.
You bid too low.
Oh, yeah, I was like, oh, yeah, I'll do the whole hallway. And then it was the office building, like the second floor of this guy's office building. I was like, oh, I'll do it for $100.
Yeah.
You know, I'll buy the paint.
I bet he was jumping at you.
Oh, man. Yeah. And then it was...
Make a $12 profit on that job?
I don't even know if I broke even because, the walls were so... Like, they hadn't been painted in so long. It was like I had to keep buying paint because it just sucked it up and sucked it up.
So,
and my dad finally went to the guy and he was like, you know, you're really taking advantage of my son. He was like... Yeah, and the guy was like, I won't say what he was. But anyway, he basically said, sorry, he gave me a quote and I'm sticking to it.
It's a handshake deal.
Yeah, pretty much.
But my point is, if you don't start earlier, then you don't learn. And so what we've got is we've got 26-year-olds who are learning lessons that in the past 12-year-olds would learn.
Well, I think we've talked about it before. Is that this the idea of a teenager is a modern creation?
It is. It is.
And that has created this intermediate period where you're not really a child, but you're not really an adult. And so, what are you? You just kind of hang out.
That was celebrated through TV in the 50s and 60s. Sure.
And you know, you take for instance, I wanted a new bike. I think I was like 12 years old or something. I want a 10-speed. I want a 10-speed. My dad was like, fine, you can have one, but you're buying it yourself. How am I buying it myself? He's like, look, there's a lawnmower, there's a gas can, go cut somebody's grass. So I took the gas, and I took the can, and the mower, and I went over, and $10, I'll cut your grass for $10. I cut the yard. I got back, and he was like, okay, let's go fill up the gas can. All right, that's $2, give me my $2. All right, and that was my mower, and for you to get your own mower, it was cost this much, so you're going to be using this much, and oil, and da-da-da. So I need $3 for that, and now you made $5. It didn't take me long to realize I needed about $20 a yard to really be turning up, making way towards this
bike. It's a good lesson when you start hitting taxes and all that stuff in your paycheck.
I'm 12 years old, and I got this idea of overhead costs and business expense and everything else. And I got freshmen and seniors that I've taught economics to that are looking at me like, what are you talking
That's
about?
That's my favorite scene in Bill Cosby with Theo when he starts taking the money back.
You going to have a girlfriend?
That was great.
Yeah, well, I think, my wife told me a story about one of the discussions she had in class this year, and I think it was in psychology, and you've got students saying, well, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to go to school, and I'm going to get this degree, and I'm going to have this job, and it's going to pay me this much a year. I mean... How presumptuous is that? How, you know, do you not realize that you don't just to go up to an employer and say, I'm going to work at your company and you're going to pay me $53,500 a year? Like, that's not how it works, you know? And so it just shows you that these kids have, somebody's told them, you can do whatever you want to do and you can name your terms and you...
If you go into this field, you can make this amount of money.
Yes, exactly. You know, you read that somewhere.
And that is true.
Yeah.
If you go into that field, you can make that amount of money if you're willing to do the time to get to that level.
Yeah.
Or go to the state that pays that.
Or I'm going to go to this university and get this scholarship. There's an admissions process. They don't have to take you. They don't have to give you the scholarship. Yeah. You know, it's good to have goals, but they're so, entitled is probably the right word,
But that hard lesson is to learn because what John's saying is...
He's learned very late.
They haven't hit their head, trying to get these things earlier to go, wow, everything I want doesn't come true.
Look. It was a choice.
When I was a kid, I wanted a new bike. My dad would say, go work,
go work for it.
But then when I got the money, he goes, you don't really need one. You can't buy it. I was like, come on, I got the money. No, you need to say that for something you really need.
You would just ride around the neighborhood and find a wheel and then find a frame and find another wheel.
Well, I had a bike. That was the whole thing, though. It was like, I had a bike, and he's like, you got a bike. You don't need a new one.
You think I'm joking. We did that.
Use your imagination.
We rode around. My bike didn't have a seat for a while.
But, that would hurt.
But yeah,
then I found a banana seat.
But yeah, you want We got Walmart jeans. You know, Christmas time's coming along. You're getting Walmart jeans, and it's like, I don't.
You were down there in the home base of Walmart, weren't you?
I'm like, yeah, Arkansas, yeah. I don't want to wear Walmart jeans to school. You know, kids that wear Walmart jeans to school, they get picked on. You know, that kind of saying, you know, feeling. And mm-hmm. I'm like, I want Levi's. Okay, well, the cost difference between Levi's and Walmart jeans is this. So here's the deal. You give us the cost difference, and we'll buy you Walmart or Levi's for Christmas. Mm-hmm. And you got one pair of Levi's at Christmas and one pair at the start of the school year, and you got two pairs of jeans that year. And
make them last.
Make them last. And the first time you go out there and you slide and you in your new jeans and you rip your knee out and they put a patch there, and you're walking around looking like who'd have thunk it. Yeah.
Now you wouldn't even have to patch them. You just leave the
leave
rip
them,
in
leave
them.
Leave the butt on there. People are paying good money for jeans with fake money.
Eventually the 80s did roll around, and that was a good look for a teenager in high school.
Yeah. Get the ripped jeans, get you a black t-shirt, you were all good.
Never grew the mullet. Never grew the mullet. Can't find a picture to prove it.
We'll go out there and search.
How about that podcast?
Yeah. So I'm sure Pastor Sean is missing the opportunity to cry all this work ethic stuff, but hopefully, you know, you had as much fun as we did come sitting around this table. So if you have any comments, you can post them directly to this podcast. And thanks for listening, as always. Have a great day.